It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hey guys, Rick here from the Mobile Hunter Podcast, and I'm here to tell you about one of our sponsors, Saddy's LLC, Custom Ammunition and Gun Works. Aaron Satterfield and his family have been turning out some awesome game loads that have been putting down deer, waterfowl, and turkey all year long. The Saddy's Fatty, the turkey load that we use, can stop a bird dead in its tracks. Check them out at SattiesLLC.com. That's SattiesLLC.com. Or on Facebook at Satties LLC and tell them the Mobile Hunter Podcast sent you.
Welcome to the Mobile Hunter Podcast. Our mission is simple. We want to help you become a better hunter. We believe that mobility kills and efficiency will set you free. Hey everybody, welcome to the Mobile Hunter Podcast. Tonight, got a very special guest on the line who just popped some heads in Florida. We got Josh Stubbs from Elevate Stand Company. How you doing, dude?
I'm good. I'm awesome. I wish I was still in Florida, but
I can imagine all the killing you guys did down there. Did you guys end up with three or four?
Four?
Yeah. How many days were you there?
I got to hunt. I hunted 2 days. One of the day in the middle, I was hunting with a 16-year-old kid down there.
Okay.
I'm trying to get him a turkey. So I didn't even carry my gun that morning.
Okay. Did he end up bagging?
No. If I'd have known, kind of how the gobbler acted the day before, like where he flew, we could have killed him easy, but the kid, his name was Mason, didn't tell me about it until after the turkey flew down. He's like, oh, that's where he went yesterday.
Oh,
no. He flew across a big pond, and he was in like a big cypress tree. And we couldn't see him. We could hear him. And he gobbled a ton. He gobbled probably 40 times off the limb.
Jeez.
And he didn't fly down until 30 minutes after the sun was up. But he flew across the pond, and that's when the Mason said, yeah, that's what he did yesterday. And I'm like, I thought he had flown down to a different spot. So, but, I mean, we still had a great time, but that's part of, watching turkey behaviors, and a lot of times they do the same thing. If they're not busted off the roost, they're generally going to go to the same spot in the morning that they did the morning before, so.
Yeah,
that's all right. Then we killed two on Monday.
Okay, man, I'm really looking forward to trying the Florida birds out for sure. I've gotten mixed reviews. A lot of people say they don't gobble very much, but you happen to have a different experience with that, right?
Yeah. So this was the third year in a row that I've gone to Florida that I've started out there. And I like starting out there is because then, if you get that bird, then it's a whole, at the beginning, then you've got a pretty good chance of killing a slam that season. Obviously, if you start somewhere else, you're still going to have to get the Osceola. So I just like starting there. I like starting around, the opener. They haven't been, haven't been messed with for quite some time. So seems to make it a little bit easier. But yeah. Every time we find birds in Florida, it has been more of my experience that they gobble a decent amount on the limb and on the ground. So I know that's not everyone's experience, but the last three hunts that I've been on in Florida, that has definitely been the case. Like I said, that one gobbler was on fire that morning, and he gobbled no less than 40 times on the limb.
So you have birds gobbling pretty good in Florida. Do you feel like the Osceola is the toughest bird, or do you feel like the Eastern's the toughest bird for you?
Oh man, I Yeah, I think it really comes down to the hunted bird is the toughest.
Okay.
I've killed a lot of easy Easterns. I've killed a lot of easy Rios. Have killed some easy Osceolas. But the ones that start getting pressure, and I don't care what kind of turkey it is, unless maybe the Merriams. I haven't killed a lot of those, but they seem to be about the easiest of any of them. And it's probably the amount of pressure. I mean, there's just not as many guys that hunt Merriams just because there's not as many people out there.
Sure.
But you get on a pressured Rio or a pressured Eastern, and that's where it, you know, starts to get fun. That's where you might need a couple, 2-3 days to get them killed. But, Eastern's definitely probably just because there's more people that chase after them.
Sure. You know? Okay. I like that answer too. There really is the truth. That's all I've hunted is Easterns, and I've had plenty of hunts that were beyond easy, but most of those were on unpressured birds or very light, little pressure. Once you mess with those turkeys a few times, man, they can get tough real quick.
Yep.
Birds seem to adapt. I know when I've been out to Kansas to pheasant hunt, you see pheasants flying everywhere, roosting in the fields. By day two or day three, you shut your car door too hard. And
yep.
I mean, it's literally like trying to access on a big buck. It's crazy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about what kind of, you're a pack guy instead of a vest guy for turkeys. What do you carry as far as a pack, and what are you rolling with inside that pack?
Yeah, so I run a Kuyu 2300. It's not the Pro. That's the one that would have like the carbon frame, and you can change out the bags. This is just simply a 2300. It does have the waist strap that comes around, and there's two pockets along the side. So it kind of is similar to a vest in that regards, but it's obviously not designed for turkey hunting, but you can use it for turkey hunting. The number one reason why I use a pack like that is because I'm carrying a Canon with a 7200 lens, and then I'm also carrying the 85 millimeter lens. And that, if I had it close to me, I'd show you, but I mean, it's a really big lens. And I'm running that inside of a cube inside the pack.
Okay.
And so that's the biggest reason why I run a pack. But inside, so I've got the camera. I've also got it with are you familiar with Peak Design, the brand?
Yes, yes.
The little clip. So have you seen that camera clip that attaches to your strap?
Mm-hmm. And you can have it on.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So I run that as well. I mean, that is awesome.
Yeah, nothing touches that.
Yep, access to your camera and getting it pulled off and on your tripod is just a lot faster. So I run a tripod as well. And then I'm trying some new ones. As far as my calls, I'm running dead end calls.
Okay.
Clock, which... I don't know when they came out, but they're blowing up Instagram with ads, but they've got some awesome calls. Jeff Foyles, the well-known goose hunter, he makes some awesome mouth calls. And then Cartel, obviously they make good calls, but that's what I'm running for my mouth calls and for my pot calls. Green's Run calls. It's probably my favorite just because, not necessarily because of the sound. It has awesome sound, but he puts feathers on the inside, so behind the glass or behind the crystal. He basically glues it to the part behind it, and so they're, you know, super pretty. And then Trap House, Zach Adams from Trap House, he made us some, you know, custom Elevate with that, you know, turkey logo.
Okay.
built into the call. So those are the that's what I took to to Florida. Yep.
Okay. Nice.
And then, you know, like an owl call and crow call and stuff like that. But as far as calls, that's what I'm running. Beyond that, I'm running on my camera. I'm running the wireless Rode 2. It comes with two microphones, so I can put one on the hunter or a little bit further away from me. Let's see what else. Obviously, snacks. Can't run out of snacks. I'm a big gummy bear guy. My wife and my mom swear if they cut me open, I would be half gummy bear. Because I buy them in like the 2-pound bags. You don't mess around with those small bags.
Do you have a brand that you are loyal to?
Yeah, Black Forest.
Black Forest art. Yep. Oh my God.
I'd fight you over saying that they're not the best. They literally are.
You can smell them as soon as you open the bag.
Yep. Yeah. They're awesome. And then I've got a couple small chargers that I will take with me, just because if you're sitting there, you've got your audio on, and you've got on for 3-4 hours, you'll need to recharge those wireless mics.
Yeah.
And that's pretty close to everything. Of course, I run Browning Maxis 2 with Saddies, 12 gauge, 3.5 inch, 2 ounce number 9s, and those have been pretty much my bread and butter for the last 2 years. So ever since I saw you guys talking about the 20 gauge, I think I reached out to you and I'm like, dude, what are these Saddy shotgun shells and how do I get them? So I think that was you made the introduction for me to Aaron, and it's been good ever since. So
yeah, there's some good shells.
Yeah, they are. My buddy, actually, I've got two of those Browning Maxes, and one's in the Mossy Oak Bottomland. That's really my turkey gun. And he wanted me to bring that for him so he could shoot that one. Because when he shoots my shotgun, he kills him with one shot. When he shoots him with his Franke, it takes him like 3 times, and sometimes he doesn't hit the bird at all. So,
what does he have?
He has a Franke.
Okay.
It's like I'm not even sure what that. I don't know if it's like based on a Beretta or Benelli or something. I'm not super familiar with that brand. I just know they've been around for a while. But
okay, gotcha.
Yep.
Yeah, the old Saddies, man. The TSS is something else, and it's so interesting because there's so many people that I think don't really quite understand it still. You know, I think a lot of people, which don't get me wrong, you do have the perk that you can shoot significantly farther, in my opinion. But yep. Really, it got popular because a lot of these running gun guys wanted to carry a 410 or a 20 gauge and, yep. you know, not carry a bigger gun around running through the mountains and stuff and still be able to put them down. And dude, a 20 gauge with nines, we call them bread and butters. They're a 1 5/8 ounce load, and it's a 2 3/4 inch shell, and you just absolutely waste turkeys out at pretty good yardages, according to somebody I know. we won't mention the numbers, but
that's right.
But
the beauty of it is, do we like killing them at 70 yards? I'd rather kill them at 20.
Yeah.
But when you are hunting different types of terrain, that bird might be at 20 and you cannot see him.
Yep.
You know, you had him in easy killing range. You can't see him. We had that happen this past spring last year in Illinois. We got him to 40, but I could not see him. The other guy that was with me, we could not see him. When he got to 70, that's when we could see him, because he wouldn't cross this ditch. We didn't realize there was a ditch right there. And I won't tell you, that bird killed. We had him within range, and we couldn't see him until he was walking away. So,
jeez. Nobody ever thinks about the times that don't go right. And it's amazing, too, because you know, if you hunt one single state and you have all kinds of vacation, all kinds of time, and you're a one or two bird state and that's all you're going to do, then by all means, let gobblers walk at 30 and 40 yards all you want. But when you're trying to go from state to state and just have fun and have an adventure, and of course, like you said, of course we want the birds at 15, 10 yards, mm-hmm. but it doesn't work out like that sometimes. When I was hunting with Emery in Indiana, I mean, that turkey was not going anywhere. He wasn't. We literally were on three different levels. We were below him, above him, and even with him. And he wasn't leaving like a 10 or 15 yard square area. And he just was going back and forth, gobbling and strutting. So I shot him and he died. You know? And it wasn't like, you know, you had to run him down, shoot him again. Like, he was dead. So, it makes it nice, but also can also be significantly more forgiving at close yardage when you're running a 9 pattern or a 9.5 or 10 pattern. So what are you shooting out of your saddies?
Number
are you
9.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I thought you said. And for those that don't know, those are 18 grams per cc cubic centimeter. So essentially, that's like the equivalent of a number 5 in lead. So imagine shooting 5s with the pattern density of 9s. That's what you're getting. And the other cool thing about TSS is that it doesn't deform like lead. Now, lead kills just fine. There's nothing wrong with it. And that's a good thing that it deforms. But when you hit the body, oftentimes you won't make it through the feathers. You'll find quite a few shot in the breast. Yep. I'll be honest, I think I've only found one or two pellets in my turkey's body from the TSS because it actually passes through the entire bird, or at least feather to feather.
Yeah.
So it's quite interesting. It's like a full metal jacket. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about calling. We had a conversation the other day, and I've thought about it a lot. You see guys comment all the time about it, and I probably catch hell for having this conversation, but we'll give her a go. I don't know. I basically, you know, I talked to you about my thoughts of people that were significantly good at turkey calling, paired with, of course, the knowledge and woodsmanship. Can't just be able to make turkey sounds, being able to read a bird, understanding where you're at, the terrain, a little bit of scouting, stuff like that. But essentially my thought was you basically can't overcall. What are your thoughts on that? Maybe kind of go into that a little bit.
Yeah. I grew up, I'm 48, just to give away my age. I got into turkey hunting when I was 11. And I could not shoot a turkey at 11. Kansas back then, you had to be 14 to kill a big game animal, and they considered turkey a big game. And so I had to wait 3 years, but I was just eaten up with it. So mouth call, box call, all that stuff. Learned how to call, and you know, basically went with my grandpa and my dad for those 3 years calling for them, you know, trying to call turkeys in. So by the time I was 14, I was going by myself. But in that era, it was in the turkey hunters that I knew, it was stressed upon me that, you know, don't call, but maybe every 20 minutes or every 30 minutes. and that stuck with me for quite a while. And I killed a lot of turkeys.
Oh, sure.
Growing up. But what I have learned is that you can call quite a bit more than every 30 minutes. but a lot of it does depend on the bird. And I'm not just talking, hammering yelps out, but actually what a hen would do in real life, you know, every day going through the woods, just scratching and just soft yelps, like they're walking through the woods, not like it's a hunter sitting by a tree trying to call every gobbler in. And so I personally have, over the last probably 10, 15 years, I've definitely changed my strategy in that we call more, a lot more compared to, you know, what I was dealing with in my teens, in my 20s. But part of that is just because we've, you know, been traveling a lot more for turkeys versus just, you know, hunting them in Kansas. But I think a lot of it is knowing what calls to make. Once again, it's not just hammering out, you know, 8-10 yelps every 30 seconds. That's just not going to do it. But reading that gobbler and being patient, sometimes it's going to take 2 hours. I think part of what people miss is that it may take 2 hours for that gobbler to come in. Most people probably do not have the patience to sit there for 2-3 hours waiting on a gobbler that might not even be responding to them, or maybe responds every 20-30 minutes. But yeah, I'm with you. I don't know if I would say that you can't ever call too much, but I definitely think that you can call more than a lot of people give credit for. Yeah,
I agree. So I was pretty much the same way. I mean, I always called sparingly. I also didn't believe that you should call to a bird on the roost. And I met my buddy Pierce, and he literally reversed all of that. He hunted with a guy that's local to me, and he had the same instance where they were out and turkeys start gobbling on the roost, and this dude's just going after it, you know, cutting up and everything. And he's sitting there thinking, man, now he sure is calling a lot for a roosted bird. And then he said he went quiet for a little bit and then started to ramp it up again and went into a fly down cackle with wing beats and everything. And he said the two gobblers came running across the field, came right in, and they doubled off the roost. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then so I go hunting with him, and he literally shows me the same thing. And we're talking about birds. We're in the last week of the season, fourth week of the season, on some very, very pressured public. And dude, he's just, now here's where I'll say this can sound very misleading. So when I say you can't overcall, I'm talking about being mobile in the sense that, you know, you've got a buddy dropped back calling to the bird. If you have a buddy dropped back that can remain out of sight of that turkey and work around and scratch in the leaves and pitch calls here and there and everywhere, I think he can basically do whatever he wants as long as he sounds good, realistic. Obviously, you got to read the bird, but it blew my mind. He did that and called two gobblers right in, and I couldn't take a shot because they were at like 20, 25 yards, and they were so close together that I couldn't shoot. And then they picked me off and boogered, and we chased them, you know, the rest of the day. But he ended up calling those birds in like two more times that week. And we just, Chris could not close. Chris did not close. I remember our last hunt together, they were up on a ridge, and it just seemed like they weren't going to come down. I had already boogered a bird off the roost. Those birds were going back and forth on the ridge, strutting and gobbling. I'm like, all right, well, we're not going out like this. I'm going up there to you if you won't come down there. Well, wouldn't you know it?
Mm-hmm.
The birds that were on top of a ridge with an advantage, and I'm below them across the creek, I cross the creek, climb the ridge, and they go downhill and across the creek on like the second to last day of the season to Pierce. And I thought, I don't even know if I've seen that before. So just super crazy.
Yep.
But I really think that, you know, for those that don't believe that being a good turkey caller matters, I would encourage you personally to rethink that maybe and start learning to get a little better, maybe watch some competitions or learn from a guy that competes. So those guys, they just, and the majority of them, I'm pretty sure all of them are very good turkey hunters too. They kill the hell out of turkeys.
Right.
And if you ever listen to a guy, my personal favorite is Bo Brooks. That guy is beyond.
He's insane. He's insane.
I mean,
yeah, he is so good.
I think a lot of it is honestly kind of like a musical talent, mm-hmm. understanding how to use your diaphragm and just being comfortable with that call in your mouth and understanding everything about it. It's so incredible.
And the thing that I would add, you know, guys that go, you mentioned competitions, you know, those guys are not calling like they would call to a turkey.
Yeah.
And I know that's not what you meant. What you meant was those guys can do anything they want to with that call. They are so good that they can make any pitch. They can make any string of yelps. They can do literally anything with that in their mouth. And I think that's where a lot of people, you know, they don't practice. And I'm not saying everybody. So what I would say is I would encourage people just to spend more time with that turkey call in your mouth to where you can get comfortable, where you can make any kind of sound. And it's going to take a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take you getting the right call. That's why I run, you know, 4 or 5 different calls.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that I noticed in Florida is that on the last day that I was there, that I hunted, that Monday, I was running a call, and I can't remember which one it was, but it was literally, it was higher than every single hen that was calling from the roost. And I switched calls to mimic because I knew which one was a lot lower. And to mimic the hens that were in that tree, I'm not a music guy as far as I don't know how to read music, but it was my call was like several octaves higher than those calls in the hen. So I switched my call to sound more like them.
Okay.
Now I don't always do that, but it was such a stark difference between those calls, between those hens and the call that I was using that morning.
Oh yeah.
But practice. I drive my wife crazy. I drive the people in the office crazy. They know turkey season is close because the number of, you know, turkey calls coming from my office. But part of it, I just love it. I love, and I think, I mean, I've loved to do it since I was a little kid. Drove my mom crazy. I've just always loved to call turkeys. So it's more of a, you know, it's obviously a passion for me, but it's also a discipline, because if you want to get good at turkey calling, you can't just call for a week out of the year. You know, it's just like your bow. Sorry, I've got someone calling me. I'll have to.
I was like, man, that's a different noise.
Yeah, sorry about that.
You're fine.
I think I lost my train of thought. Oh, just that, you know, you just like your bow. You can't pick up your bow after not touching it for a year and expect to shoot out to 40 yards.
Nope.
It's the same thing. Same thing with a turkey call. You can't go all year without calling it and expect it to be sounding right. So.
Yep. Amen to that, dude. Well, where are you headed? Where are you headed next to schlock some redheads, man?
I might be going to Nebraska. Going to try to hook up with Ethan Stubbs. I don't know the kid that films with Winky. We're still trying to figure out if we're related, you know, how far back you have to go. I know we're related somehow, just because there's not a lot of people with that same name. But him, sure. Jared Mills, we're trying to hook up with those two guys and maybe do some archery hunting in Nebraska. There's a lot of states on the books. Probably won't make all of them. Hopefully you and I will be able to connect in Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be after Tennessee. But we've got one of the things I'm really excited about is we're going to be heading to Wyoming, Montana, and North Dakota. And so chasing Merriam's in the mountains, that's been like a lifelong goal to kill Merriam in the mountains, or at least have a mountain in the background. So I'm looking forward to that one. And then we've got, you know, Illinois, Oklahoma, obviously here in Kansas, maybe Missouri. Alabama is out there, but I just, you know, obviously it all takes a lot of time, so we'll see.
Yeah, we need like a private jet with free gas.
Yeah, and a free pilot.
And a free pilot.
We couldn't have even afford the pilot, so
right.
Like, but that would be awesome. Maybe if one of us wins the lottery, we can hook the other brother up.
Now I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that our odds are pretty low, because if I had to guess, I don't think you play the lottery at all.
I don't.
And I don't play the lottery at all. So we're
I've got a better chance of finding the winning lottery ticket on the ground outside of the gas station than I do actually buying one. So,
dude,
no.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey guys, Rick here from the Mobile Hunter Podcast, and I'm here to tell you about one of our sponsors, Saddy's LLC, Custom Ammunition and Gunworks. Aaron Satterfield and his family have been turning out some awesome game loads that have been putting down deer, waterfowl, and turkey all year long. The Saddy's Fatty, the turkey load that we use, can stop a bird dead in its tracks. Check them out at SattiesLLC.com. That's SattiesLLC.com. Or on Facebook at Satties LLC and tell them the Mobile Hunter Podcast sent you.
Oh, man. It's been a crazy week, dude.
Yeah. We never actually finished the Florida. We started talking about the Florida.
Oh, yeah. We really biffed that, didn't we?
That's all right.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, so basically starting from day one, the previous 2 years I went with an outfitter, and that's primarily because, you know, I'm short on time. And basically, you know, you're paying for access.
Yeah.
The second outfitter, yeah, they did go with us, but for the most part, you know, we were calling. The first year we were basically on our own. We just paid for access. They an outfitter, but he was just basically subleasing, yeah, you know, property to other people. This year we were hoping, you know, trying to do something a little bit different. We were basically trying to find somebody that we could trade hunts with. And so the buddy that went with me, Andrew Giles, he found a kid on Facebook, and the deal was basically, you know, he either goes whitetail hunting and Illinois with Andrew, or he comes duck hunting in Kansas with me. Since Illinois, you know, is over the counter on deer, and it probably is going to take you 3-4 years to draw in Kansas for deer, ducks is pretty easy. And so we found that guy. His name is Jared, and so he was started sending us pictures. He was getting trail cam pics on gobblers pretty much every day, and almost every one of these gobblers was always by themselves around, you know, that 9-10 a.m.
point,
which I love. I mean, I love to hunt that noon. If in Florida, I mean, it's starting to get pretty hot, especially for me coming from Kansas. Even you guys, you know, in Ohio.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's not 80-90 degrees yet. And so Friday night we get in super late. Man, we're gonna have to get you some caffeine, or could you drink coffee?
Dude, if I even looked at coffee right now, I'd be up till like 6 a.m.
Yeah.
It's bad. It just, this time of year, I just go.
Yep.
And then when I start to sit still, I start yawning. It's bad.
I know. I get it. I get it. I actually took a nap, so I today when I got home from work.
Man, what? Well,
go ahead.
How old is your youngest kid?
Like 23.
Tell me your youngest kid is not a kid anymore without telling me.
Yeah, exactly.
I got those little Rugrats going crazy. I freaking screwed up and went to like a gigantic international grocery store trying to find this damn rice to make hibachi tomorrow night. Corey from Latitude's coming over to help us with our website. So I wanted to make him a good dinner. Well,
yeah.
I'm like, well, what the hell kind of rice do I use? Well, I look it up, figured out, can't find it at the place. And then I do find it and it's in 50-pound bags. And I'm like, holy hell. Like, I don't need that much rice. It's like $80 worth of rice. I was like, yeah, I'm good there. But had my little boy with me and we were all over the place, came home, rushed and made smash burgers on the griddle and stuff for dinner and then got them put down and here we are. But so it's been a day though. But anyways,
yeah.
Please tell me about these turkey birds that died.
Well, yeah. So we, Andrew's plane got in super late. So we didn't get to Jarrett's house until like 1 a.m. And, you know, we're getting up at 4:30. I'm like, oh man, it's going to be, I hate when that happens because it just sets you up that first morning and then you're just tired for the rest of the trip.
Yep.
But we got up. He went with one of his buddies and Andrew and I went by ourselves. He gave us a pen of some property that we could hunt and there's a bunch of trees and then there's a big open pasture area. So we get to the edge of the, and we have no idea where these birds are going to be roosted. We get to the edge of the fence between the pasture and the, and all the trees. And, pretty much hear some gobblers, not right away, but pretty soon, and we see them on the ground very early. And they were probably about 500 yards away. And there was a gobbler, and there was another gobbler. He looked closer to like what I would call a Super Jake, kind of in between beard.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at the video, something had to have happened to his beard because he had some hooks on him. But you wouldn't think that just looking at the length of his beard. But we called those suckers from 500 yards into 5 yards. We did have a little help from the neighbor. When those gobblers got about halfway in between us, a hen came from the east and joined them. And at some point, I can't remember how long after, but the hen left them and came into our trees where we were set up. But she was probably about 60 yards away. Well, the neighbor shot a gun. I don't know if he was sighting in his turkey gun or what. But he shot. And well, those turkeys no longer wanted to go east. They wanted to go, you know, west towards us. Obviously, we're calling to them. They came right up to where we were. I mean, they were at one point, they were probably 3 or 4 yards away. I mean, the Jake was, or, you know, well, I called him a Jake, but he was so close. I'm like, he's going to screw it up for us because he's like staring us down and he's like, you know, 3 steps away. Got some phenomenal footage of that gobbler. I'll have to send it to you on like Instagram or Facebook, but got some awesome footage of that. That gobbler coming in, strutting, and Andrew's gun was laying in his lap. And this bird is like 5 yards away, which at 5 yards, you have a little bit. I mean, you can move and still have time to shoot. So that's what he did. When he finally got out in front of him, he picked up. You could see the instant that gobbler saw Andrew. But he, he only made it like 7-8 yards and just got smoked. So we were feeling pretty good. I mean, probably an hour and 15 into the hunt, and we already had a bird on the ground.
Jeez.
Yeah. So we were we were feeling really good. And we had seen some other birds head straight to the east. So we knew there were turkeys on this property. So then, you know, we loved to take pictures and, you know, after kill interviews and stuff like that. So it took us a minute to get all that done. And we met Jarrett back at his house, and then it was off to try to find a bird for me. So we went to another property that was about an hour away. And I think we got out there around noon, and it was, you know, getting pretty warm, but we were set up in the shade. We just got up behind a big tree, next to a big tree, and we were just prepared to, you know, sit there for 2-3 hours and just, you know, scratch leaves and little soft yelps and stuff like that, just trying to imitate a hen just walking through the woods. And I had just done a series of small yelps, and we had scratched the leaves, and I was actually, I think, in the middle of scratching leaves, and that gobbler ripped off, and he's probably 70, 80 yards away. I didn't hear it because I was making noise, but Jared heard it, and I turned over and looked, and that gobbler was already at 60 yards.
Jeez.
Have you seen those SX decoys? They're out of North Dakota. Anyway, I picked a pair up. They had this heck of a deal. They're fully flocked, Jake and a hen decoy, and they're super realistic. But they had them at NWTF, and I think it was like maybe $120 for the pair.
Oh wow, I'm looking at them now. Jeez, oh.
They're insane, especially their duck decoys are crazy how detailed they are. But I had a hen out. He had it. It's a highly effective decoy, but it's a like a foam Jake, and he attached a small fan to it. It looks hideous. He calls it Jake Break. But that, for whatever reason, it makes gobblers mad. And well, that gobbler saw the decoys, because instantly his head turns super bright red, and he just comes, he closes from 60, 70 yards to 30. So from what, in like, I think it was like a minute 30, from the time I heard his gobble to the time I shot him was 90 seconds. I mean, he closed that fast. And he was just making a beeline for the decoys. And I'm kind of hit and miss with decoys. Most of the time I don't use them, but in the right setting, they can definitely help. A lot of time, you know, here in Kansas, trying to even get a decoy set up without them seeing you can be difficult. I know they can hinder, but, you know, in the right circumstance, it can also definitely help. So
sure.
That was number two bird on the ground in, you know, 4.5 hours, 5 hours of being in Florida. So we were super pumped. That one was that bird was super emotional for me. I got super emotional on that bird just because, you know, it's the first bird that I've taken since Reed passed away, and Reed loved turkey hunt, and that's just literally all I could think about, because I would always call him and Jared, you know, when I you know, got a bird down on my trips. So that was definitely tough. But then Sunday morning, I took that 16-year-old boy, Mason, and we had a good time that we just couldn't close the distance. But we're, you know, hunting swamp area. There's two big ponds in there. There's water everywhere. I actually saw an alligator. He did not like us, so he quickly went in the water. But he made it. It was a pretty big splash. I don't know what size he was, but it was not, did not seem very small. So, and that's part of why I love Florida. It's just so different from Kansas, and it really anywhere else that you hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's other places that have alligators, but I really love Florida. And then Andrew decided he wanted to leave, so I had to drive 5-hour round trip to get him back to the airport. So I'm really tired, but I get back Sunday night and we wake up and it's sprinkling and it's going to be intermittent showers. And like, that's not what I wanted, because of my experience with turkeys in rain, you know, they just don't gobble as much. And he kind of got mixed up on directions and took us in the opposite direction of where we needed to go. And he didn't realize until, I mean, it was already legal shooting time, so it wasn't super bright because there was clouds, but we were definitely not in the spot where we were supposed to be. So we had to hike over there. We had to hike pretty quick because I knew birds were going to be getting on the ground pretty soon. So we got to an opening and I, you know, did some soft yelps, and that gobbler cut me off before I finished. And I'm like, okay, that's money. But I actually, he said that it gobbled. When I'm calling, obviously you can't hear. But I know, you know, he said, oh, he just gobbled. It was right in front of my, or right in the middle of my series. And so I'm like, okay, we got to get over there. Well, we almost went too far because we're hoofing down to get in position and we see a turkey sail out of the tree. And I'm like, oh no, we just screwed up. And we just stopped. And then there's more turkeys coming out of that tree, more and more. And the gobbler's out there strutting. There's another five over in the corner, and it's like, I don't think they saw us. I think they just, you know, it just happened to be when they were starting to fly down, because they didn't act like they were spooked at all. So there's probably 25 turkeys out there. It's probably six toms. And the hens kind of went to the east towards like where we had just called from. And I'm like, hey, I've seen this too many times. My younger turkey self would have tried to call them in from right there, right by the roost tree. And I'm like, that just does not work out most of the time. He's like, I think, you know, maybe we should just sit here. I'm like, no, we got to get down. We've got to basically run. So we're trying to get back to the spot where we called from. And we get up there, and they're already 40 yards away from that spot. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, dude, they're coming. I know they were coming, you know, to that where they thought, you know, a turkey was. I'm like, dude, we just got to get up close, you know, to where we can shoot, because there was a bunch of brush in front of us. I said, I'm not going to be able to film because they are coming. And we get our guns up, and by this, they're already 20 yards away. Like, the entire flock is out in front of us.
Jeez-o.
And I wanted to kick Andrew, because I'm like, this would have been like a perfect, like, we needed somebody to film over our shoulders. You know, this is not a set a tripod up. There's just too many moving parts at this point. And the hens spotted us, which I knew they were going to, but at 20 yards, I really didn't care. Those hens walked up 10 yards away. Not all of them, but there was probably four or five that were 10 yards away. And so we had rehearsed it the night before. It's like, okay, we're going to shoot on three, but the three is boom. So it's one, two, boom. Because I've seen that burn people. Oh, I thought we were shooting like after you said three, you know? So we've got beads on our gobblers, but he can't see the one he's supposed to shoot. I have a bead on the tom on the right. He's the one in full strut. He can't see the one on the left. And there's all these hens coming in and out. There's Jake's running around, and I'm like, I'm not gonna, you know, smoke too. So we're going to wait till they're, you know, completely clear, and do not want an errant pellet, you know, hitting the hen. So he finally, the gobbler that was on the left finally moved into his position, you know, where he could see. Mine finally gets clear. I'm like, okay, you ready? He's like, yeah. One, two, boom, I smoke mine, and I don't, his turkey doesn't fall. I'm like, thinking, you know, this is all a split second, but I'm like, well, that's kind of weird. And he's like, I didn't shoot. My safety didn't click all the way off. Oh. I'm like, are you kidding me? Well, you know how turkeys, after you shoot one, sometimes they're just completely, especially with the TSS, 3.5 inch, 20 yards.
Yeah.
A lot of times they'll just completely, there's no movement whatsoever, but it's like, I guess, reflexes in their body or whatever, and then they start flapping. Well, my bird started, his wings started going a little bit. Well, that gobbler that had just got spooked by the shot came running back, and he was going to start whooping on my bird. So he got to shoot that bird at 20, and this time his safety came off. And so we doubled up, and that just was awesome. We got some great pictures in the rain. I didn't get as many as I wanted, but it just started pouring. Like 10 minutes after we literally walked back in the rain. So, but it was awesome.
So that was day three?
That was day three. Yes, sir.
And how many days were you slated to hunt?
Wednesday. I would have come back like 5:30 Wednesday night.
Okay.
If I had needed to. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Yep. I tried to get a flight back to Kansas on Monday, but it was, I went on the American Airlines app. That's what I was flying. And they had a ticket for $4,100.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, babe, I'd really like to come home and see you, but $4,100, that's a lot of turkey hunts. So
yeah, that's a lot of things. Jesus. Yeah.
A lot of things. Absolutely. Yeah.
God, how do you even, was it first class at least?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. Yeah. Crazy.
Dude, that's insane, man. Just
I'm sure part of it was because, you know, the flight was like, it was 7 hours away from the flight, but really, I mean, who's going to pay that? I guess maybe someone, I mean, you can almost get a chartered jet for, probably couldn't make it to Kansas, but you could make it a ways.
Yeah. That's insane, yeah. Dude. Good God. So did you end up still flying back just like a day later or something? Or?
I flew back the next morning at 6 a.m.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But by the time, so I, what was that?
Where do you fly into with Kansas?
Wichita.
Wichita. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So cool. I booked it for the next morning, which allowed me to take my time. I went, found a taxidermist, born again taxidermy. And that guy, he's in his 70s. Yeah. I would guess he's like 78 because he said he'd been married 62 years. So get married at 16. Yeah, that probably puts you at 78. So, but just an awesome guy, but all he does is turkeys. That's all he's got. And he mounted 260 birds last year.
God,
that's a lot.
Yeah.
That is a lot. So I got to, you know, I got to go in there and talk with him. He just was full of stories, and get to see, you know, there were just some awesome birds in there. He had an oscillated bird that he had mounted, and that's high. I think I'm going to go next year to get one and maybe a Gould's.
I was going to ask about that if you'd done the Gould's yet. You got to go to Mexico to get a Gould's?
Yeah, they have them in Arizona, but I don't know if a non-resident, I know the flock is, it's not very big. They don't have very many of them. I doubt a non-resident could even shoot one. And I could be wrong. Don't fact check me on that one. I don't know. But most people go down to Mexico. Or at least everybody that I know that has killed one has gone down to Mexico.
Man, the old oscillated bird would be those pretty sweet.
Those things are awesome. Did you see that? Did you see that? Well, they had several of them, but did you see those ones
with the leopard?
Yeah. Oh my.
With the leopard that had like the impala in the tree, and I had to take pictures of that. It was beyond insane. That was a phenomenal display.
Yep. Over by our booth, did you see that Rio? It's probably the best turkey mount that I have ever seen. It was on the, like, if you're headed towards our booth there, it would have been on the left-hand side of all those exhibits. But it was hands down the best turkey I think I've ever seen.
What was noticeable and superb about it?
The presentation of the feathers.
Okay.
I was talking to my taxidermist, who happens to be one of my good friends. And we were talking about turkey heads. You know, it's really hard to do turkey heads. And he's like, well, there's only one person that can do them right, and that is God. And that is hands down the truth, because, you know, replicating the color on a turkey is very, very difficult. I've only seen a handful of people that, you know, what I would say is right. Yep. But that's why I think turkeys are so hard to do.
Yeah. It's interesting to look at the guys who are really good turkey taxidermists. The ones that I actually know end up using a fake head. Some of them do a freeze dried. The guy that does mine literally uses a foam fake head. He paints the head, and I think he does phenomenal work. I've seen some guys that try to just skin the head out like you would a deer, and that's like, I had a buddy, he's probably gonna hear this, he was saying something, he like said something about taking it to there, and I'm like, man, I'll be honest with you, when you showed me his mounts, I wasn't like jumping for joy. I know it's a little cheaper, it's like $300 cheaper, but old DeFazio up in Columbus is like a world-class turkey taxidermist. Yeah. He's very good. And, you know, he killed a public land bird like fourth week of season, just standing there one day after work or something stupid, like put decoys out in a tilled field and was just sitting behind a honeysuckle bush. I think he was actually standing, and he looked up and the bird's out there strutting, and he's like, oh my God. And like, he almost never killed turkeys, right? I think he'd killed one since the time I knew him and hadn't killed one in years. And so he kills this bird and brings it over. And I'm like, oh my God, it had like 1 3/8 hooks or something. Like, it was a boss. And I was like, dude, you might think about spending a little more on that. And, you know, having it done right. Man, he took it to that guy, and it looks like basically somebody pooped a turkey's head out. I mean, it is pretty rough. I felt terrible. Yeah.
My first Osceola, I hunted I was going to hunt till I had to leave, and I was just going to have to go straight to the airport. Well, I killed it an hour before I needed to leave, so I had no time, you know, to get it frozen or anything like that. So I had to leave it with the guy, and he took it to a taxidermy place. He was like, yeah, he does, you know, just tons of stuff for everybody. And, and it's okay, but it does not look great. But it, you know, it is what it is. I couldn't take it to anybody else. I didn't want to just skin him out, and I wanted it, you know, I wanted it mounted. So it is what it is, but I feel you.
Yep. Now he's a really good looking turkey decoy.
It's not going to win any blue ribbons by any means. But all right. I was going to tell you that the turkey that Andrew shot was like nine inch beard, but 1 7/16 spurs. So Yeah. Mine was 10 and an eighth inch beard and inch and 3/8 spurs.
God.
My second bird was 11 and a half inches on the beard and inch and a quarter on spurs.
Dude, do they just have longer spurs down there or what?
That's one of the reasons why I like Osceolas. Okay. They've got long spurs. I think the first Osceola I got, I'd have to measure them again, but I think they're right at an inch and a half, maybe just a hair over.
Getting into this traveling the country turkey hunting stuff a little bit, like hunting birds in Indiana, Indiana birds seem to have, more often than not, everyone I've seen has short spurs. It's very weird. Kentucky birds are like Ohio. But the Indiana ones, man, I don't know if it's just luck of the draw or what, but going like 7/8 inch spurs, and I'm like, dang it. I'm a spur guy. That's actually my best set, as well as inch and 7/16. And then I've called in three other birds for guys that had inch and a half spurs. And
that's awesome.
Finally, well after all of those, I finally got my own. Like, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's awesome. Cause that definitely means something.
Oh yeah.
I know you can't always tell age from spurs, but more often than not, you know, you've killed a 3 or 4 year old bird. You know, they've been around a while. It definitely means something.
You can always tell too. In my opinion, I think those are the easiest birds to kill when in situations, I guess I should explain. They're extremely confident in themselves and very territorial. So they don't take any of that, you know, other jakes and stuff being around, unless you got like 15 jakes.
Right.
Right.
But
it's interesting. Every single one I've seen is extremely aggressive. Very cool to hunt those bigger spurred birds.
Yeah.
Well, brother, this has been a really good time. We're going to have to hopefully link up in Kentucky and
scare
the hell out of the local wildlife, man.
Hopefully put a couple of them down.
I'll try to get some childcare lined up for a couple of days, and we'll go out there and
run some hills.
All righty. Well, guys, tonight we have been joined by Josh Stubbs, and this has been the Mobile Hunter Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in, and good luck this season. Thanks for tuning in to this week's podcast. The best way you can support the podcast is by sharing online and with your buddies at Deer Camp. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram and leave us a 5-star review.